is FSM.
And thank you very much, Simon. Another very warm day in the northwest of the UK. Temperatures peaking at 29 degrees. Is that an Indian summer? Can you say that anymore without offending Native Americans? Is it an Indian summer? I think it is. Welcome to Tuesday's, nearly said Wednesday, Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
And the first time we did this was exactly 6 years ago today. Not bad, eh? Not bad at all, I tell you.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, James Perloff is a brilliant writer and a lovely guy, and he's not been on this radio program for a long time. It's about time he came back. He's got a brand new book out about coronavirus. It's about more than coronavirus. And he was kind enough to send me a copy of it, so I invited him to come on this programme to chat about it, and he's going to do that later in the programme, the great James Perloff. How lovely to be speaking with him again after such a long, long time. He's the main guest today. A little bit later on, before that, I will round up the news. What news? I'll round up the news. We'll have a chat, you and me. Yeah, we'll have a chat, you and me. I put a post on Facebook. I'm not going to dwell on this six-year thing much today. I might say something later on, but it won't be anything melancholic. I might have one or two things to say about one or two people later on. I put a post on Facebook this day, 6 years ago, on Monday, September 15th, 2014. This programme was broadcast for the first time. I've been doing radio, producing and presenting in TV for years before that. But this thing came to be 6 years ago, and I'm going to dispense with the cliches. It does feel mad, though. It feels a bit mad because it doesn't feel like 6 years. It sometimes feels like a lot less, sometimes a lot more. But thank you to every one of you for listening to it over the years and for supporting it. Maybe a bit more on that later on. Maybe not. As I said, if you want to read a post I put on Facebook, go to the Richie Allen Facebook page, and it's the first post there, I think, and I just chat a little bit about it. There you go. Right, so James Perloff a bit later on, and thanks for the best wishes on social media. I won't read them all out. Thank you. So the UK unemployment rate has risen to its highest level for 2 years, officially. The rate of employment grew to 4.1% in the 3 months to July, compared with 3.9% previously. And younger people are being particularly hit hard by this, with those aged 16 to 24 suffering the biggest drop in employment. So compared to other groups, 16 to 24-year-olds not doing well. And I say this not to be, again, not to make you anxious or nervous, but I think it's the tip of the iceberg, really. Wait until the furlough scheme ends at the end of October, and many of those currently enjoying the furlough scheme will realise they don't have a job to go back to. 695,000 workers have lost their jobs at the very least since March, since the lockdown. Think of what that will do to their health, eh? No jobs, you know? You had people on television this morning talking about getting delivery jobs or driving an Uber. But drive who and drive them where? And as for delivery work, automation is going to close that avenue soon enough. At least I'm being told. I'm being told by the very same news programmes. And this morning there was massive talk about testing on UK media. Testing, testing, testing. Every single radio show featured punters, or listeners, we call you punters. You're a punter. Listeners were coming on, calling in to complain that they are desperate to get a test, but they just can't get one. I want to test desperately, but I can't get one, or I've got to travel 100 miles to get one. Why are so many people so desperate for their COVID test?
We want to be free. We want to be free to do what we want to do. And we want to get loaded. And we want to have a good time. And that's what we're going to do.
Away, baby, let's go.
Yes, That's it. We want to test to prove that we don't have the virus so that we can live our lives. Stockholm Syndrome of sorts going on here. The people have been mind-fucked beyond belief. Right? Begging for tests. Radio 5, LBC, BBC Breakfast. Punters queuing up to get on air and bemoan testing. More on that a little bit later on. This was interesting this morning. A cafe owner in West Sussex called Michael Schneider. He runs the J. Voke Vintage Tea Room in Chichester. He's gotten in a bit of hot soup with the authorities. Because he put up a sign in his premises saying customers wearing masks would be banned from entering. He said masks are a government muzzle which offer no protection against the spread of coronavirus. I believe he's probably been watching an old man in a chair on social media. His poster says masks offer you no protection against the virus. Will a chain link fence protect you against a mosquito? Well, will it? Said the sign. He even had a name for the sign. It was called Con a Virus. Notice government muzzles. I reached out to Mr. Schneider, of course, like probably lots of people did, to invite him on radio today or tomorrow or whenever, but I haven't heard back as of yet. The sign also said, turn off your television and engage your brain before you spend the rest of your lives living on your knees. Owned by the state. I love this guy. I love Michael Schneider. And if Chichester wasn't so far away, and if my old banger probably would break down and I'd be calling out the, I don't know which breakdown service we're with, but I'd be stuck at the side of the road like a big Egypt. I'd go down there and have a cup of tea, even though I don't drink tea either. Tried to reach him. So did a lot of people. Have a listen to Noel Gallagher, or Noel Gallagher, as they call them up here, speaking to Matt Morgan on Matt Morgan's podcast about masks. The Oasis legend, guitar player, pulled no punches. Now, here's an extreme language warning. If you have a child in the room, turn it down for 90 seconds. I'll count you in to turning it down. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here is Noel Gallagher on mask wearing. Go on, bye.
Yeah, it was good, actually. I've enjoyed the summer. I mean, it's fucking a fucking virus bullshit and the masks and all that. It's fucking depressing. But
So if you've been out, you've been in a shop, so you must have a mask.
I don't wear a mask, no.
Have you not? What? So, like, aren't you meant to by law in a shop, but no one's enforcing it? Is that what's going on?
No, you're not, because it's the whole thing is bollocks. You know, you're supposed to wear them in Selfridges, yet you can fucking go down the pub, be surrounded by every fucking cunt. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, actually, we don't have the virus in the pubs, but they have it in Selfridges. All right. Like, I was going up to Manchester the other week, and fucking some guy's going, can you put your mask on the train? And I was like, and they said, because the transport police would get on, they'll find you £1,000, but you don't have to put it on if you're eating. So I was saying, all right, so this killer virus that's sweeping through the train is going to come and attack me, but it's going to see me having a sandwich and go, leave him.
Yeah, but I get what you're saying, but what...
He's having his lunch.
But what? No. Why that's wrong is because, like, they know that people have got to eat, so that is, but, like, for the times that you're not eating, because basically what's good about the mask is, if someone's coughing next to you with coronavirus, the mask is going to lessen the dose you get, right? So if you breathe in a lot of it, your immune system, no matter how healthy you are, might be overwhelmed by it.
Mate, so, listen to me. When it's a law, right, it's not a law. There's too many fucking liberties being taken away from us now. And I'm afraid until, you know, I've been in shops today. Have you got a mask? No, I haven't. You have to wear a mask. Says who? Says the manager. Who's the manager?
Yeah, but who are you kicking back against? Just like, because they've just told what to do.
I don't give a fuck. I choose not to wear one. If I get the virus, it's on me.
Yeah.
Like, it's not on anyone else.
But like...
Right, so if every other cunt's wearing a mask, I'm not going to catch it off them. Right, and if I've got it, they're not going to catch it off me. So, fucking, I just think it's a piss take.
It's a piss take, says Noel Gallagher, pulling no punches there. Matt Morgan's podcast can be downloaded by whichever podcast provider you use. Very good. We'll do COVID in a minute. Before that, though, did you hear about Venus, the planet Venus? Every one of the shows went with This Today. Every news programme went with Venus at exactly the same time in the rundown too. Same time in the schedule. Do you remember I did a programme about that explaining how it works? All of them, Sky, Channel 4, BBC, all of them, LBC, Talk Radio, they get their news from exactly the same sources. So they ran with this Venus story today. I'm your Venus, I'm your fire, your desire. It's about planet Venus and the idea that living organisms are floating in the clouds of the planet. Astronomers are considering at one time life may be Venus or the conditions for life are there because the gas, some of the gas is called phosphine, which is made up of one phosphorus atom and three hydrogen atoms. And here on Earth, phosphine is associated with life. They found it on Venus, so maybe there's life on Venus, but not as we know it. Right, okay. BBC Radio 5 Live's Nicky Campbell, world champion virtue signaller for 3 years in a row, he interviewed an astronomer who explained the finding. You'll hear her explanation. And then you'll hear Nicky Campbell, because something occurred to him. Only on the BBC. Have a listen. Venus, life.
But what they found is indications of something known as phosphine, which is something which shouldn't actually exist in Venus. So Venus is almost like Earth's evil twin. So they're the same size, but Venus is much hotter. It's almost, you know, it's the hottest planet in our solar system. It went through what you could say is the greenhouse effect. And it's this planet where we thought life could never exist. And now we've found these indications of phosphine in the clouds of Venus. And phosphine is something which is produced naturally by bacteria on Earth. So because we found that and we don't think it should exist on Venus, that's obviously a very surprising finding. And one of the possibilities is that this could be a biosignature and an indication of perhaps simple cell life existing on Venus, but we don't know that for certain yet. It's just kind of the first step in trying to answer that question, because as you know, the late great Carl Sagan would always say, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and there's nothing more extraordinary than the claim that we are not alone in the universe.
There you go, right. Now, so Nicky Campbell just listened to that. Remember where Venus is situated geographically now in our solar system? Nicky had this nugget of wisdom, this question. Nicky Campbell, virtue signalling world champion, current world champion.
Yes.
Interesting what you say about global warming. So is there any possibility that...
You're just not going to believe this.
...see that billions of years ago, it was a lush, habitable landscape of rivers and streams and wonderful forests and amazing beasts, and then global warming hit, and look at it now, baby. Is that a possibility?
Look at it now, baby. Any possibility that billions of years ago, Venus, which is next door but one to the sun, had green forests and rivers and waterfalls and all of that? Jesus Christ, Nicky. The sun drives climate in our solar system. The sun drives climate change on Earth, Nicky. Uranus drives your radio show, Nicky. What bollocks that is. Surely she didn't agree with him, did she?
Not really with Venus, but interesting.
Oh, thank God, not really with Venus.
Interesting enough, Mars, which has always been kind of like the number one candidate for simple life elsewhere within our solar system, that we know or think in the past used to be much warmer and wetter, and we don't know why the planet Mars is essentially now red and, for all intentions and purposes,
we
dead.
We don't know now why Mars is red and essentially dead, but we'll put it down to climate change anyway. That's right. Who's driving breakfast today? Which engineer? It's Uranus. That's just garbage, that, isn't it? Listen, I know there will be people listening to me, and we've had them on the programme before, who believe that Mars, there is evidence of ancient civilizations on Mars, and I'm very open-minded to that. I know. I am. Don't be shaking your head, I am. Absolute monumental bollocks on Radio 5 Live. Everybody went with that today. Ratting out your neighbours now, dear listeners. Dear listeners, ratting out your neighbours saves lives. Said who? Said the Home Secretary, Priti Patel. Here she is, speaking to the media this morning. Rat on your neighbours.
If I saw something that I thought was inappropriate, then quite frankly, I would effectively call the police, or if it was in a social setting as well. If there was a big party taking place, it would be right to call the police. It is very clear that, you know, government has said people, gatherings, you know, gatherings of 30 or more people, anyone that has effectively defined the rules, they will be helping to spread coronavirus.
That bitch! Pretty says squeal and help prevent coronavirus. Now, I had a massive row with my neighbour Jack about this. Jack has been climbing on people's walls and looking into their gardens to see if there's more than six people there. Then Jack's been calling the police. I called him a snitch, I called him a rat, but Jack didn't care.
You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties. You want me on that wall. You need me on that wall.
There's no parties anymore, Jack, because of people like Pretty Patel. Tar and feather these people, said an old man in a chair at one time, right? So off to Jeremy Vine then, BBC Radio 2, 19 minutes past the hour. Snitching. He's got a regular guest on, a guy called Peter Blexley. They call Peter the Radio 2 policeman because he's a former cop. Would he snitch on his neighbours, would you, Peter?
I think if I witnessed an oversized and therefore illegal gathering where there was the potential for this wretched virus to be spread, then I probably would notify the authorities. But there are so many factors that could affect that. And of course, all of this has not been helped by some unclear messaging, a lack of clarity about what applies in Edinburgh, what applies in Exeter, and so on and so forth. And it's a very confusing landscape.
Yeah, what? Because the children thing is 11 in Wales and 12 in Scotland, and the children count whatever age they are in England. And is it indoors or outdoors? But in the end, I suppose you know it when you see it, don't you? You've got a dozen people in somebody's garden and it shouldn't be happening.
Yes, I think that's a pretty clear set of circumstances that you describe. And I think that is worthy of being reported. However, our understaffed and overworked, beleaguered police service, I fear, are probably highly unlikely to be able to respond to these kind of reports. I would like some clarity from chief constables and the commissioner of the Met. I would like to see them being on the airwaves in preference to me saying what they will or what they won't do.
Yeah, what will they, what would they, what they, what wouldn't they do? Listen, the cops have no right of entry without your consent, number one. And even if you do let them in, you can tell them to leave at any time. Don't forget that. This gets better, this story. Jeremy Vine tells an anecdote about a picnic that was broken up yesterday. Now, yesterday, when all your troubles were, well, just coming home to stay. Yesterday, the rule of six was introduced. The rule of six, you can't have any more than six people in your house at any one time, and you can't gather with any more than six people outside. So yesterday, there was a picnic broken up somewhere, and it was covered by BBC News.
Yesterday, BBC News had a piece with John Kay, and he was going round with the police in a park, and the first thing they came upon was a mum who was having a picnic, and there happened to be seven people in the group, but one of them was a toddler. And the mum said, surely the toddler doesn't count, and the police said, yeah, I'm afraid so. Now, I can't imagine any police officer joined the force to be breaking up a picnic of seven.
Absolutely. Not one officer in the land joined to do that.
But they're obviously doing it.
Absolutely. Definitely not. And it is so confusing for people. And in fairness to the police, they have been reasonably consistent from the outset in saying that they're going to use encouragement first and then education, and enforcing the law will only be the absolute last resort.
Yeah, but they're harassing mothers and babies in parks, telling them they're breaking the law. So if you didn't sign on to the Boys and Girls in Blue to be doing that, why just not do it? Why just not do it? I don't understand why. Now, I'm not quite sure what the titles are in terms of the chain of command inside police stations, but just let's say sergeant, let's just say chief superintendent. Why aren't they telling their their rank and file, lads, we get these directives from the Home Office, right? Just fucking ignore them. Lads and lassies, don't worry about it. Go out and do your business. If you see people in the park, just ignore them, leave them alone. That's a question I think is worth exploring. We didn't sign on for this. Well, don't do it then. Is it a public service? Snitching. Jeremy Vine, is it a public service to snitch in this time of unprecedented crisis?
Do you think we've got some of this wrong? People using the words dobbing in, shopping, snitching, etc. I think one of the headlines today, neighbourhood snitch. Actually, that all suggests you're not doing a public service, but maybe it is a public service to tell on your neighbour.
What?
Well, Neighbourhood Watch was a very successful scheme set up many decades ago.
Yes, Neighbourhood Watch was an interesting idea. But at the time, they weren't asking the neighbours to be spying on how many people the Smiths have to dinner on any given effing day. Neighbourhood Watch was basically about things like, there is a stranger hanging around. Checking car doors. That was Neighbourhood Watch, you dipstick. Anyway.
Oh. With the express intention of trying to reduce crime, particularly burglary and car crimes. Now, if you see somebody breaking into a car, are you going to report it to the police? Yes. Sadly, you might get as much of a lack of response from them as you would to a dozen people having a barbecue.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's the truth. Maybe the cops are ignoring it and will ignore it, but I'm not sure they will. I've had a tweet this afternoon from Martin in Oldham. It's not good, this. Let me read it out to you there. You're with the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. It's warm, it's bloody warm in Salford. Here in Salford. If I say Greater Manchester again, somebody will bottle me in Salford. Martin Rice sent me a tweet. Thank you, Martin. Richie, and he's backed his tweet up with a photograph, photographic evidence. Always good to have a bit of photographic evidence, isn't it? Marvellous, photographic evidence, marvellous. Martin said, today, Oldham Council were knocking on doors on my street. I was in two minds about answering the door, but I did. They, the council workers, were making sure people knew the new rules. And when I asked what the purpose of the visit was, they said, it's basically the council showing our face. We're showing our face. I said, says Martin, that I was probably the most sceptical person they'd meet this week and that I wouldn't be following the rules. The only thing that seemed to hit a nerve, and of course I was being polite, he says, was when I said that they were spreading fear about a virus no more deadly, and possibly much less deadly, than seasonal flu. That for people who were already lonely and isolated, the sight of a council representative in a high-vis jacket and face mask turning up at their door could in itself be frightening. I don't know, I hope the tide turns before the second lockdown, says Martin. Now, you're seeing this in Oldham, because, of course, Oldham was one of the first towns in the country to have restrictions reimposed on it, short of a full lockdown. Or maybe it was put back into full lockdown a couple of weeks ago. So you've got councilmen and women now knocking on doors, asking people, are they aware of the rules? So we use terms like tyranny and totalitarianism, and they become a cliche, and people get tired of listening to them. Boring, Richie. I heard you say tyranny 1,000 times. Well, what the fuck else is it? Hi, who is it? The council. We want to check that you're aware of the rules. The new rules. We're here to see if you've got any more than 6 people in your house. Yeah. Lovely. Back to snitches. Snitches. After Jeremy Vine spoke about this a bit more, we got the callers. Here we go. Nowt so queer as folk, as I said the other evening. Callers are wonderful. Here's Georgia. This is comedy gold. Georgia phones in, and Georgia likes a bit of snitching. And then she has a wonderful tale to tell us about a soothsayer, about somebody with second sight, about a clairvoyant. This is just wonderful radio all round.
Georgia, you would do the same as Anthony. You would report a gathering.
I would report a gathering. Would you report a gathering, Georgia?
Absolutely. Yeah, of course I would.
Have you got a neighbour who's been a bit naughty?
both sides have been a bit naughty and at the back of us. So,
in fact, both sides and at the back of us are being naughty. I'm surrounded by rule breakers, says Georgia.
All round us have been naughty, so absolutely.
And you've got one neighbour, I gather, who's giving, what's palm reading or something?
What now? One neighbour is doing palm readings.
Thing?
I think she gives readings every day, all day, every day. When I've been off from work, I've seen people coming and going without masks. So from various different households, various different people coming and going nearly all day. When I was off from leave, they were coming all day, every day.
So
sounds like a lucrative business, that, reading palms. People coming at all hours of the day. You sure she's reading palms there, Georgia?
Sorry, when you say readings, what do you mean?
I think she just gives readings of, I don't know.
What, like reading?
Well known in the area.
But reading, maybe. Fortune telling.
Yeah.
I see. So, and is she dressed up in some way? Is that a clue?
How do you dress? I mean, do fortune tellers dress in a certain way? Like, there's the gypsy in Blackpool who's pretty famous. Yeah, is it gypsy? I'm not going to guess. It's not Rose Lee, is it, in Blackpool? How do they dress? Have they got that flowing costume and the headdress and the crystal ball? This is some story.
No, we just know her, that she does this reading.
She has the gift.
She's renowned
right
in the village where we are, yeah.
And did she see it coming that you'd reported her?
Ah, no, Jeremy. Did she see COVID coming? That was the question. What use is she as a soothsayer if she didn't see this bollocks coming down the line, eh?
No, I haven't reported her yet.
She hasn't reported her yet. Good girl.
I will consider reporting her if it carries on. And I will definitely report anybody who has a gathering of more than six people.
Right. I will consider reporting her if she carries on seeing clients and reading their palms. But she's presumably only seeing one client at a time. Therefore, she isn't in breach of any guidelines. You see? Yeah. Then we had Patsy. Patsy came on next. This made me laugh. I loved Patsy. Patsy came on to say, I'm a rat, but I don't like to be called one.
Patsy's on the line. Patsy, you have shopped a neighbour.
I would disagree with the word shop.
Okay, or snitch
grass.
I don't agree
with any of those sort of terminology. Right. What I've done is what we're supposed to do. There was a party going on Saturday evening, young people, which is fair enough. I feel really sorry for young people. They're in a terrible situation. They've been told that they're immune, etc., etc.
But I called the police anyway and I wrecked their party. I feel sorry for young people, but I dropped a dime on them in any case. I mean, this is comedy gold.
Patsy's on the line. Patsy, you have shopped a neighbour.
I would disagree with the word shop.
Okay,
or
snitch
grass.
I don't agree
with any of those sorts.
I don't agree with the word snitch or grass. Oh, Jesus. Okay, Patsy, we've got a song for you, love. Does anybody have any fucking idea what Snow is singing in that song? Answers on a postcard, please, to Richie Allen Show Towers, care of Salford. You're an informer, love. You've shopped your neighbours. Oh, I don't like terms like that. Of course you don't, you rat. Stop fucking ratting on your neighbours. There you go. What time is it? 28 and a half minutes to... As the top of the hour, this is the Richie Allen Radio Show for the 15th of September. And I want a tune now while I take a glass of water. Here's a tune from, well, sometime in the early 1980s. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. Great to be with you. Don't forget James Perloff. Later. Simple Minds and Someone Somewhere in Summertime, yeah. I used to always bollocks up back announcing that track. Couldn't get my head around it. It must have been the alliteration, maybe, I don't know. Live from Salford, it's hot, it's damn hot. How hot is it? Open a window. It's warm in the northwest of the UK today. Temperatures, as I said, peaked to 29 degrees. A little bit warmer down south. Down south. Stuart says, Richie, if Patsy grasses up the medium will know it's her for sure. I wouldn't bet on it. She didn't see COVID coming, did she? Think of the money she could have made in the stocks and shares she could have bought and short sold and all the rest of it. Mwinga has been on to say a few things about that as well. How you doing, Mwinga? How you doing to Sooty's rehab there? Hi to Busy, hi to Patrick, hi to William, and hi to some of these comments. Hi to Faisal, how you doing, Faisal? How you doing, Faisal? Hi to Hydra Violet, how you doing? Nice to hear from you today. I love the names. Hi to Charlie Stevenson. How you doing, Charlie? Hi to John Stott. How you doing, John? Hi to Patricia Braunschweiler, great friend of ours, good friend of the show's. Wonderful lady in Zurich. How you doing, Patricia, in Zurich this afternoon? Hi to Sharon McCaffrey. Could be here all day long. Thank you for your kind words about the 6th anniversary of the show. We should run a competition, really. I don't even think you can Google the lyrics. I don't think you can. What the hell is being sung here, eh? Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I like you, bum bum damn. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I like you, bum bum damn. If I was on any commercial radio station in the country and I did that gag, I would be fired immediately and called a racist. But as I don't give a shit, here we go again. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. It's very clever, actually. It's very good. Snow and Informer there. Right, let's move on. Let's move on. James Perloff, later on in the programme, the author, speaking about his new book on COVID, Red Pilled. Longer title. I'll tell you the title shortly. I'll tell you where you can buy it as well. He sent it to me and it's very, very good. Very good writer, James Perloff. So they locked down Birmingham. No mixing at all between the houses. None. Ah, well. Where are the Brummies standing up to it? I don't know. Where are the Salfordians standing up to it? So back to BBC Radio 5 Live. Dr. Justin Varney is the Director of Public Health Birmingham. So he would have been involved in the decision to send Birmingham back into lockdown. Our intrepidly brave reporter, Nikki Campbell, asked him, is it justified to put Birmingham back into the misery of lockdown? Well, is it?
I think it is justified. We've seen a very rapid increase in cases. As you said, we spiked up to about 90 cases per 100,000. Just 3 weeks ago, we spiked at 30. So we've almost trebled the number of cases per 100,000 population. And that's a very, very rapid increase. We're seeing an increase across every age group, every ethnicity. And as Stacey said, we're seeing little pockets all over the city. If this was concentrated in one area, it would be a lot easier to manage. It's not. The whole city is affected at the moment. And that's why we've agreed with government these additional steps to try and break the chain of transmission in our local communities.
Have people been irresponsible? Have they ignored the guidelines?
He's fucking useless, Nicky Campbell, isn't he? I mean, okay. So what does the doctor then, Dr. Varney, who was involved in locking down Birmingham again, what is he? Have people been irresponsible?
I think the reality is what we've seen is that behind closed doors, people have forgotten. And it's so easy when you haven't been able to see friends and family for a long time and you have them round for a meal or for a children's birthday party, the social distancing goes out the window. People go in for a handshake or a hug because they go, oh, this one time just won't matter. And the problem is it does.
It does. The problem is it does. You're having a party, you see. Close your eyes and put yourself in the situation. And you have people around and you haven't seen them in quite a while and they forget and they just go in for a hug or a kiss and they don't think it matters, but it really does. Started with a kiss. Never thought it would come to this. Don't remember me. Started with a kiss. Yeah, one kiss and you could kill or hospitalise God knows how many people. That is, that's the media today. More then, this time on the clamour for testing. Mentioned earlier on, everybody wants one. It's the next, it'll be the big thing at Christmas. Think back to Transformers. Think back to the big track. Think back to Barbie. The various incarnations of Barbie. Barbie with a rodeo costume. Barbie with the equestrian gear. Barbie with... maybe none of that stuff existed, it's just my dirty mind. the toys that came out at Christmas, the Nintendos. This year's must-have Christmas gift will be a fucking test for coronavirus. Because everybody is on telly and on radio today demanding them. I want one. So, why does the good doctor, Dr. Varney, the public health Birmingham doctor, what does he say to that? People want the tests, but they can't get them. Why not? What do you say, doctor?
The real important thing is that people who have got symptoms, even if you can't get a test, you have to isolate. You cannot take the risk. We cannot risk this killing granny and granddad. We cannot risk this killing vulnerable siblings, disabled people. We have to get this under control. And so if you can't get a test, please do the responsible thing and stay put at home with your household and just keep trying.
Wow. Yeah. So you want young men and women, nothing wrong with them, totally unaffected by the virus, but allegedly they might have the antibodies. You want them to destroy their futures and their children's futures by losing their jobs and their livelihoods, forced to stay indoors to protect some people whom are very sick already. So the world should witness catastrophic economic collapse, causing maybe the deaths of millions and millions of people, so that we can allegedly protect some vulnerable people. Tom, surely you've got a question for the doctor.
Let me ask you something. Are you out of your fucking mind?
Yeah, he must be out of his fucking mind, because that doctor must know the consequences of the claims he is making. Let's force young people to give up on their lives, don't have one, in order to protect some mostly very senior people with comorbidities. As I said, I'm not going to get into again the economic and health consequences of the fucking lockdown itself, not the virus. It's mad stuff, isn't it? You heard that, didn't you? You got that?
We cannot risk this killing granny and granddad.
Yeah.
We cannot risk this killing vulnerable siblings, disabled people. We have to get this under control.
All together now?
Don't kill granny.
Don't kill granny. Mad times. And on to testing then. Why can't people get tested? Here's Matt Hancock, the man responsible, the health secretary, addressing the House of Commons today. Why, Matthew? Why no tests for those who want them? They seem to be all the rage.
There are operational challenges and we're working hard to fix them. We've seen a sharp rise in people coming forward for a test, including those who are not eligible. And Mr. Speaker, throughout this pandemic, we have prioritised testing according to need. Over the summer, when demand was low, we were able to meet all requirements for testing, whether priorities or not. But as demand has risen, so we're having to prioritise once again. And I do not shirk from decisions about prioritisation. They're not always comfortable, but they are important. The top priority is, and always has been, acute clinical care.
Mm.
The next priority is social care.
Yes, and they did again today. Dr. Varney on Radio 5 Live, I could play the audio, but I won't, said that they are aiming for... They're aiming in the very early new year, that'll be early 2021, to be able to do along the lines of about 10 million tests a day. But this will be new technology. It won't be existing technology. It's technology that is already in production, in development, or they have a prototype for it. This is the saliva test. And you'll be able to do this at home. This is how they want to fuck your mind. They want everybody in the country to be able to think of when they introduced cars which were operated by breathalyzer testing. Do you remember those cars when they came out first? The car that prevented you from starting or turning over the engine if you blew into the little straw and it came up that you had more alcohol than you should. Do you remember that? This is where they want us to be in the very near future. Tested constantly. And I think Vernon Coleman said last night, and I listened to him very carefully, I think he said that our bodies have generally got bits of shitty viruses in them anyway. Bugs and infections. And most of the time we're not going around with a temperature, or we're not going around feeling badly. We've just, we're carrying this shit in our systems, right? I'm pretty sure Vernon said this last night. In fact, I know he did. So when they test, because the tests are so flawed anyway, they're going to be sounding the alarm when the tests, that is, pick up these little bits of bugs and other bits of shit and crap that's in your system anyway. And then you'll be told you can't go anywhere for 14 days. And that's to basically make life so fucking unbearable, so intolerable, so fucking miserable, that when they come out and say, you've got to take a COVID vaccine, but COVID-19 is now mutated to COVID-20 and COVID-21, you're going to have to top up these vaccines at least one, maybe two times a year. People will beg for it. Why? How do you know that, Baldy? Well, they're begging for the fucking tests. Excuse my French. They're begging for the tests. Crying. And these are not setups. I've been around the media too long. These are not actors and actresses. These are real people who want the fucking tests and are kicking off. These are people, there's nothing wrong with them. Nothing. Nothing at all. But they are vexed. They are up in arms. They are angry because they can't get a test that they don't need. So they'll take the vaccine. Oh, you're damn right, they'll take the vaccine. And not only will they take the vaccine, but they will use social media. They will use any opportunity they get to shame those of us who tell them to stick their vaccine where the sun doesn't shine. Well, they'll do everything to coerce the rest of us to take it. This is where we are. 12 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Anyone for a bit of Freddy? Tonight, I'm gonna have my son. Yeah, he'd still be young enough, wouldn't he, Fred, to be, well, to be strutting his stuff, wouldn't he? But sadly, he isn't. Freddie Mercury, well, Queen there, and Don't Stop Me Now. Glass Onion tweeted me. How you doing, Glass Onion? Richie, nice letter today for my 16-year-old son. It was marked private and confidential. He opened it. Turns out it's the local surgery offering him the flu jab up the nose. He shared it with me saying, I don't want this, Dad. I told him to chuck the letter in the bin. Thank you. I'll be getting that to anybody with asthma. I mean, most winters, they send me several texts. They never leave it at one. It's always two or three, asking you to come in, you know, it's in your best interest. You might think you're hale and hearty in your mid-40s, but you really should have this shit. And you can't text the Mac because it's all, say it for me, automated, right? It's all automated, so you can't text them back. But I do email the surgery to ask them, can they send me the data on how efficient last season's flu jab was in stopping the flu. Wink, 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 wink. They don't know. They do know, they just don't want to admit it. Peter Ebden has become a good pal. I've never met Peter. I'm not name dropping. Great guy, Peter Ebden. Lovely man, gentleman. Very helpful with suggestions and things for the show and people. He got us in touch with Vernon Coleman. Peter has been travelling back from Hungary. Back to the UK, and he sent me a text message last night, and he said he doesn't mind if I read it out. It just made me laugh. I think we have a similar sense of humour, I think. He says, Richie, that was an adventure. I just arrived back to Luton with Wizz Air. You now can't fly with them unless you wear a mask for the duration of the flight, regardless of whether or not you are exempt. I decided to eat and drink during the flight, which made a right effing mess everywhere, seeing as though I couldn't take my mask off. Wink, wink, says Peter. Then he says he couldn't use cash on the bus from the airport to the train station, and he doesn't have a contactless card. No cash. Cash going out the window. You see what's going on here? And then he made a very funny joke about not being able to use some of his money in a machine because it was counterfeited. He was jesting there. But very, very interesting. The Wizz Air flight, you got to wear a mask all the time, whether you are exempt or not. That might explain Was it an EasyJet pilot? Was it an EasyJet pilot who berated a man with chronic asthma for not wearing a mask on a plane? Was it? I can't remember. Yeah. Going to get Peter on soon to talk about healing. In fact, I might do a big, big show about healing, or even do a week about it. That'd be nice to give us a break from this COVID bollocks, eh? That COVID bollocks, as Noel Gallagher calls it. Gaddafi and company. Gaddafi and company. I don't know what they trade in. Tweeting me, over in the Netherlands, Richie, they're offering €4,700 to take part in their vaccine trials. And they admit that there is a risk. For a bit of banter, I suggested to people how we could make easy money, but I never got anybody willing to take it. I said this, didn't I, the other day, and I'm no medical person. I don't know anything. I don't know my arse from my elbow. I don't know my funny bone from my sphincter, right? But I know this. You're taking your life into your hands if you sign up to one of those trials, even if there is financial, if there is monetary remuneration. Even if there's money on offer, don't do it. It's mad stuff. Christ, somebody went to the hospital with a spinal infection, couldn't feel her arms and her legs. But according to Andrew Castle on LBC, the worst fucking tennis player that ever picked up a racket in anger, it's a coincidence. Sure it is, Andrew. Sure it is. Somebody said to me today, they said Andrew Castle is the biggest hypocrite of all time because he was on television many years ago complaining about possible vaccine damage to his daughter. I investigated it, dear listener. It's untrue. What Andrew Castle was bitching about 10 or so years ago was his daughter was given Tamiflu without any checks being done on whether it was suitable for her or not. And after taking Tamiflu, she became unwell for a period. But no, he didn't complain about vaccine damage. If he did, well, it would have been hallelujah today, wouldn't it? We would have been tweeting Andrew Castle until our fucking thumbs fell off, wouldn't we? We'd be going around to his house. Andrew, you lying bastard. But it's not true. It's not what happened. Andrew Castle. A guy said to him on Sunday morning, did you hear this yesterday? A guy said to him, a girl got paralysed, but you take it anyway. Yes, I would. I can't wait for the vaccine, said Andrew. I can't wait. Good lad. Good lad. People are saying to me, why don't you try and get Denise Welch on the programme, Richie? Listen, these people, while they scream about coronavirus restrictions on Twitter, these people are cowards. In general. Why? Because when you reach out to these people, and I can't say that Denise Welch is a coward because I didn't reach out to her, but in general, they're full of mouth and trousers on social media. But as soon as a radio show like me, as soon as a radio presenter like myself reaches out to them, they all of a sudden they don't want to know. Well, it says on Wikipedia that you've had some questionable characters on the programme. All of these people are full of mouth and full of social media protests. When they get a chance to come onto a radio programme with a fucking huge listenership, they don't want to do it because ultimately they're not really in favour of free speech. You see what I'm saying? Peter Hitchens is another one. Friend of mine from TPV works with Peter Hitchens. Why don't you go on the Richie Allen show? No. Why? Because you're a fucking wanker, Peter. Ultimately, I agree with you on COVID, but you've not got a bollock to your name. So don't be asking me to get Denise Welch on or Matthew Letizia or anybody else, because these people believe in free speech and freedom of expression up to a point. But they still have their image to preserve. It's all bollocks in the end, really. Isn't it? That might have sounded a tad bitter, but believe me, it isn't. I've been dealing with that for years. 6 years, as a matter of interest, as a matter of fact, don't you know? Oh, I'd love to have you on the programme. Oh, I can't. I can't. I read about you. Hope Not Hate said you're a bit of a racist. Well, I'm not, as it happens. All right. You're not, but I see you had a racist on. I did, and I argued with them, and we had a good ding-dong, and then we parted company. Yeah, but I can't come on because it might impede me in the future. I might not be invited back on the BBC again if I went on your show. Ah, I see. So you're a fucking idiot then. And that's when you never hear from them again. Marvellous. I want to say hi to Larry Jazz. Larry Jazz is one of the nicest blokes you could ever meet in your life. And a brilliant DJ. Not only radio, but live DJ. Larry Jazz was an old friend of mine from Costa del Sol. Top man, Larry. Lovely to hear from you today, pal. I miss chatting to you back in those days there. You're still there, thriving on the Costa del Sol. Good to hear from you. Yeah. A lot of people I met through Talk Radio Europe, through radio in Spain, are listening, still listening to these radio shows today. It is coming up for the top of the hour, or to the top of the hour. Don't forget, James Perloff will be on this programme really soon. We're going to talk about his brand new book. Can't wait for you to meet him again. It's been such a long time since he was on the programme. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Yeah, one of the good guys, Mark Bajerski. Go to markbajerski.com. Welcome back to the program. I think we'll get the headlines from FSN. Headlines, then a track, and then James Perloff live stateside he is today. Headlines then.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. Peace agreements are being signed at the White House between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the foreign ministers of Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates. Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny says he will return to the country as soon as he is sufficiently well, following his poisoning with a nerve agent last month. And the US has unveiled fresh sanctions against China, accusing the country of modern-day slavery.
Thank you, Simon. Those are your headlines. This is your Richie Allen radio show. 2 minutes past the hour for Tuesday, September 15th, exactly 6 years ago today. Exactly six, the very first time this programme broadcast. Lovely to be still here doing it, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Here's Katrina and the Waves, and Walking on Sunshine. Suitable, really, pretty apt considering the day we've just had here. 29 bloody degrees. Katrina and the Waves, Walking on Sunshine, the Richie Allen radio show, 5 minutes past the hour. On a very, very, very muggy Salford, the northwest of the UK. Welcome to the programme. If you're just joining it, welcome to it. Good to be with you. And I can't wait to reconnect with my guest this hour. It's been a long time since he was on the programme. He is a remarkable man, really. Some things you might not know about him, but he's a registered nurse, as well as being a journalist. Began his career in journalism in the mid-1980s. And he's written some really important books that many of you will be aware of. Books like The Shadows of Power, of course, and Truth is a Lonely Warrior. He is a regular guest on some of the biggest and most successful podcasts and radio shows in the world. And he's back with us today to talk about his brand new book. He was very kind enough to send me the book last week, and I read it over the weekend. COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pilled, which is available at Amazon.com, Amazon.co.uk. We'll talk more about where you can get it later on. The book isn't just telling you what you know about COVID. It's a very important book because it's looking ahead to what this current paradigm, this current crisis, this scamdemic or plandemic, where it is meant to go. And in that, it's a very important read. Let's welcome back to the show the one and only James Perloff. It's been a long time, mate, but you're welcome back. How are you?
Thanks, Richie. I know you've extended the invitations to me before. You know, I was immersed in writing a book on 9/11 when this COVID thing broke out. And I said, you know, something, this is more urgent than 9/11 at this point. They're making a final push, it looks like, for their New World Order to really bring it into being, the New World Order that we've been warning about for decades in the alt media.
You've been writing about it for decades, and we talked about that on the many occasions you appeared on the program before. Before we get into the book, when I meet guys like yourself that I know, that have been around, that have been warning about things, writing about things, analysing this stuff, and shouting at people for decades, in your case, to have another look at it, I can't not ask you, when this began, this particular hoax, crisis, whatever you want to call it, how did you feel? Were you prepared for it? I mean, you knew something was coming. Did you ever expect this would be happening now, that we would be living through this?
No, in 2019, which I now call the good old days, no. I don't really know anybody in alternative media who pre-envisioned this crisis occurring, a medical crisis causing a lockdown. But as things developed, people started to analyzing what was being said by leaders like Dr. Fauci and by political leaders in the UK and Australia and America, the world over. And more information started to come out. The fact that this thing had been pre-known in 2019, we didn't pick up on those signals enough to predict it, but with hindsight, we were able to determine, yes, this is part of the plan of for the New World Order. It certainly took me by surprise, Richie, but it soon became apparent they're making totalitarian moves, moves to shut down the economies of the world. That made no sense because, I'll tell you, in my own lifetime, which I got a flu vaccine shot when I was 6 years old in 1957 for the Asian flu. That was a worse pandemic than this one. And nobody back then dreamed of closing the economy or wearing masks or social distancing. So just putting it in perspective, I'm seeing a phenomenon, Richie, which we've always known that the media lies. You know, they lied about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, just like they lied about the incubator babies that got us into the first war in Iraq, the Gulf War. But never have I seen right now a greater disparity between truth and reality than what I'm seeing right now from the mouths of the mainstream media and the politicians.
And how have you dealt with it? I mean, personally, because I'm hearing from a lot of people, I won't name them, some of them are very well-known writers, and they'll be on the programme in the weeks to come, and they're telling me privately, we keep in touch, that it's hit them pretty hard, that, you know, they feel low and down in themselves, and they've got family members who are really struggling to come to terms with it. What about you and yours, if that's not too personal a question?
No, that's fine. And yeah, I find it depressing, perhaps because perhaps I've invested a little too much hope in, you know, the continued survival of America, and that our economy might continue as it is. One thing I find interesting is that on the one hand, people who are awake to the truth have an advantage over those who are blue-pilled, in that we understand what's going on, and we also take encouragement, those of us, at least who have a spiritual outlook, that even though the Bible talks about the Antichrist, it doesn't end with the Antichrist, it ends with Christ. So we have a spiritual advantage, but there's a disadvantage too, which I have people who I know who are actually blissful, well, I wouldn't say blissful, but blissfully unaware of what's coming. And so I tend to be more depressed than they are, because they think, oh, this mask thing is just temporary. You know, everything's going to go back to normal. We'll get back to America. We'll be back to normal in 2021. We'll, you know, the economy will be back up. We'll be back to the American dream. So there's sort of a contrast there. Yeah, it certainly affects me mostly. I try to, one thing I try to do, besides the spiritual aspect, is I meme a lot on Twitter. You know, I try to put a lot of humorous memes. However, I'm afraid, Richie, that if they really start to increase the death toll, we may get to a point where humor itself will no longer be appropriate. It's like if you're at a funeral, you don't go around cracking dirty jokes, you know? Yeah. And if we're suddenly surrounded with some sort of 5G inflicted or bioweapon inflicted, real rise in deaths come to fall, which Bill Gates has been hinting at with this talk of a pandemic too, then even the humor may not be helping us much at that point. But that's one thing I also do to try to keep my spirits up. But yes, it certainly affects me.
Thanks for your honesty there. Yeah, I've been the same. I'm not going to get into it. I spoke a little bit about it last night. James Perloff is our guest. COVID-19 and the agendas to come. Red Pilled. You can get it on Amazon. James will tell us later on where else you can get it. But for £12 on Amazon, that's a bargain. And I read it, and I'm telling you, it's a bargain. It's a great book, James. Thanks for giving it to me. And when I was reading it, very frustrating. It's brilliant to read it because it's brilliantly written and it's given me a lot of ideas for the show going forward in the coming weeks. Okay. It really has. How frustrating is it when you are researching it and you're finding epidemiologists, you're finding Nobel Prize winners, you're finding pathologists whom are very strongly against the lockdown measures and very strongly against mass vaccinating the entire population? It must be a real source of frustration for you, because we should be hearing from these people on CNN and Fox News and CNBC, but we're not, James. There's been a blackout. And if it wasn't for your book, I wouldn't know of the names of many of these people.
Actually, it was very frustrating to watch people like Dolores Cahill get censored off of YouTube, even though she has a mile-long list of credentials, you know, PhD immunologist, while Bill Gates, who has no medical credentials, gets all the time he wants. And to see someone like Dr. Knut Kwiatkowski, who's a world-class epidemiologist, when he said we need to develop herd immunity and stop the lockdown, he was censored off of YouTube. And Erickson and Masihi, the two Bakersfield, California doctors, they had over 4 million views on YouTube, saying they tested more people than anybody in their area. The death rate in California was 0.03%, and they said end the lockdown, and they were censored off of YouTube. So that's frustrating. But I also took a lot of encouragement in writing this book, and that I was able to – you know what I did, Richie? I took transcripts of these interviews.
Yeah.
Either found them or made them myself. And then I couldn't, of course, have the entire 40-minute talk by Dr. Kwiatkowski. So I took key excerpts and put them in the book. So it's very encouraging for me to be able to take a lot of this censored material that you can't find on YouTube now and put it together for people so that they still have it and have it in hard copy.
Brilliant. Gates, Bill Gates looms large in the book, of course. Was there anything, when researching the book, was there anything you learned about Bill Gates and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation? Did you come across anything that made you stand back and say, wow, I can't believe that?
Well, one thing that the common denominator to Bill Gates, which is that he hates anything that's natural. In fact, you know, I find that the British press has done a much better job than the American press in exposing Bill Gates. The American press, they're like lemmings. But I found that in particular the Guardian, the Telegraph, and the Daily Mail, you'll find I quote them often in my book. I noticed that I never had a quote from the Times. But yeah. In any event, the Telegraph, for example, reported that Bill Gates' satellite company planned to launch a $1 billion network of satellites to provide a live and unfiltered coverage of the Earth has been backed by former Microsoft chief executive Bill Gates. And the Daily Mail reported in 2019, could dimming the sun save the Earth? Bill Gates wants to spray millions of tons into the stratosphere to stop global warming, but critics fear it could trigger a calamity. Now, on top of that, CNBC's reports that Bill Gates is backing lab-grown meat to replace the meat we eat. Okay, yeah, of course, you know, he's also heavily invested in Monsanto.
He is
now owned by Bayer, which creates the GMOs and the glyphosate. He's against natural foods. He's against natural breast milk. He's invested in this company called BioMilk, which creates artificial breast milk. So whether you're talking about the sun or the food or our own bodies with this DNA, RNA altering vaccines, it seems like he's against anything that's God created or natural. And the other thing I noticed about Bill Gates is that if people think he's sincere, I've noted that, at least in my own observation, I've never seen him say something like, you know, people should have a healthy lifestyle. They should get exercise, sunlight.
No,
they should eat right. Yeah, supplement, build up your immune system. Take some vitamin C or D. No, for him, the only thing that will help you physically is to take one of his vaccines that he's invested in. And so that's something right there that tells me, no, this is not a sincere man. Okay, I knew that anyway, but it's just validated by many observations.
Who is he, James? Is he autonomous, Gates, or is he a bloke who has been convinced that these things are really happening, climate change is really happening, everybody needs to be vaccinated? Has somebody convinced him of all of this? And is he a front man, or is he autonomous? Is he something more sinister, do you think?
I see sinistry in this. And, you know, he was on CNN with Fareed Zakaria, and Zakaria was telling him how horrible the American economy was. People were losing jobs. It would take a long time to recover. And as Zakari was telling us, Bill Gates was giggling and beaming. You know, he couldn't restrain his glee. Here's a man who's worth $100 billion. He's laughing because poor people are out of work. Is this someone you're going to trust? No, this is a sinister man in my view. I don't want to, you know, everybody has a reason that they're bad. You know, they've had experiences. Who knows what sort of abuse they went through as children, et cetera. But in terms of him, no, I don't think he's simply deceived. I think he's a deceiver.
We're talking to James Perloff. It's lovely to have James back on the program. You've read his books in the past. He's been writing. He's been talking about these agendas for the best part of 3 decades or more. And his brand new book is a book I'm recommending strongly that you pick up. Pick up a copy of it. Read it. Give it to your sister. Give it to your brother. Get him and her to read it as well. COVID-19 and the agendas to come, Red Pilled, is out now. And it really is an important book because it's knitting together a lot of strands and looking ahead to where all of this is going. And we'll talk about that in a moment now. You touched on this a few minutes ago. People. Have people let you down? Because they've let me down. And by people, I mean good people, honest people, hard-working stiffs like us, who, you know, you'll go and watch a game with, you'll go to the soccer with, you'll go to the baseball with. Your mates, have they let you down? They've let me down, James, because they've capitulated to this.
Well, I know a lot of people who are smart, and actually I ran into somebody I knew today from church, and I actually had some it was at the post office. I had some boxes that I was of my book that I was sending to people, and I said, "Oh, I told them what I was doing. We hadn't seen each other for a while," and he said, "Oh, you're an expert now on COVID." I said, "No, nobody quote the experts," and I made up my mind. I'm going to send him a copy of the book. Let him see it for himself, because this is not about me. It's about Surikar Bhakti and Dolores Cahill and Judy Mikovits and all the great doctors from around the world, Dr. Francis Boyle, Rashid Buttar, Vernon Coleman, who you must have interviewed there, the UK. I think you did an interview also with Abraham Adil. Is that, am I saying that right?
Muhammad Adil, Dr. Muhammad Adil. Yeah, been on too.
Yeah. NHS whistleblower. I quote Meryl Nass, the bioweapons expert, and Carrie Madej, MD, who's come out against these RNA DNA vaccines, and many other doctors and scholars from around the world. And so it's really about their opinions, not mine. I am a registered nurse, though, for 45 years. I retired last year, but I knew right away when this happened that quarantining the healthy is something we have never done in the history of America. You don't quarantine healthy people. It's the sick. It's the symptomatic. It's the person with the fever, the cough. Sure, naturally you want that person, and he himself or she herself should want to quarantine themselves for a little while until their fever goes away and the cough starts to subside. But this idea that perfectly healthy people have to wear a mask and stand 6 feet apart or 2 meters is absurd. As a matter of fact,
you destroyed this in the book, by the way. It's brilliantly taken apart in the book, this nonsense. It's good that you brought up the fact that you are a registered nurse. Sorry for interrupting you. Finish that thought, because there's something else I want to ask you. Sorry for jumping in there, James, but I wanted to make that point. Go ahead.
I believe it was the Guardian, and I quote in the book, Professors Jefferson and Hannigan of Oxford looked at 172 studies related to this, and they couldn't find one that supported the social distancing for COVID.
Or the masks. You know that the Irish government commissioned Carl Hennigan to tell them whether or not masks are any good. Carl Hennigan told the Irish government, masks are not any good, don't use masks. And they basically buried his report and told the Irish public to use them anyway.
Yeah, and I actually just came out just 2 days ago. You must have seen it. There's a report that actually only 100 Irishmen had Irish people have died from COVID and COVID alone, not kind of the comorbidities. And the actual death rate from COVID in Ireland is 0.002%.
Yeah.
And this is also supported by The Sun, which this month in Britain came out and said your chances now in Britain, in the UK, of dying from COVID are 1 in 2 million. So why are we in lockdown? Why are we in masks? And why are we socially distancing?
You know what they say, though, James? James Perloff is our guest today. Dear listener, great to have him back on the program. COVID-19. COVID-19 and the agendas to come. Red Pilled is the book. Check it out. Go to James's website as well. They're going to say, and they are saying, ah, right, James is a registered nurse, so he knows a little bit about medicine. But that big bald Irish guy in the studio, what does he know? They'll say, we've done so well because we locked down. That's what they'll say.
Yeah, but you know, the places that didn't lock down, like South Dakota, have COVID rates that are less than one-tenth the rest of America. And, you know, my wife is from Taiwan originally. And Taiwan, with a population of 24 million, they didn't go into lockdown. They didn't close their schools, their churches, or their businesses. And yet, as of last month, I haven't checked the figures lately, as of last month, they only had 7 deaths out of 24 million people. And they can't social distance there. Somebody made a joke. They tried to social distance in Taiwan, where the people are packed together so closely, they'd have to stand out in the ocean. But also look at Sweden. Their death rates are plummeting. They're going way down without any lockdown. So that's proof that it's not the lockdowns. You know, Neil Ferguson's discredited computer model that is causing the drop in deaths. This, we're developing herd immunity, and this virus is petering out. And there was an epidemiologist, Gupta, from the Oxford University. You must be familiar with the Unheard Channel, yeah, which I really admire there in Britain, which has been speaking to experts from around the world. That's saying that the virus is disappearing. And actually, right here in America, Dr. Ron Paul, not only a former presidential candidate and congressman, but a physician, pointed out that the death rates in America have dropped at 90%. He said that last month. It must be even more by now. But he said that's why they stopped talking about deaths and started talking about cases. And by cases, they're not talking about sick people. They're simply talking about people who tested positive with the PCR test. And quite often, the PCR test, all that's showing is, and this is according to Beta Stadler, the former immunologist, head of the Institute of Immunology in Bern, Switzerland, who I quote in my book, is pointing out that all the PCR test is often showing is just dead, inactive DNA or RNA particles. That's from the virus, which the person contracted in the past. The person is not symptomatic at all. So
that's what Vernon Coleman told me on this program, yes, last night.
I love Vernon Coleman. He's got a sense of humor and great common sense.
Terrific guy. And he said as much last night. He said we constantly carry around in our systems bits of old viruses and dead viruses and bugs and one thing and another, and these tests are falsely picking up traces of these and then claiming they are coronavirus. So this is obviously the game plan now, right? So people are not dying from it. Not only are people not dying, but people are not sick. So it seems to me, your take on this will be fascinating. They're now ramping up the testing because they want to say, we're finding all of these cases. Yet, as you said, well, these people are not sick. There isn't anything wrong with them. But the general public doesn't know that. When the general public hears we're finding more and more cases, the cases are going up again, the public immediately panics and thinks, wow, there's a lot of sick people out there and I might get sick. But in fact, the opposite is true. So this is their, I won't say it's their plan, but it's their latest move, isn't it? Test, 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 test. Find as many cases as you can in healthy people and then convince the wider population that this is dangerous.
Yes. In fact, I quote the Rockefeller Foundation, which on its own initiative took a leadership in testing and said we must do 30 million tests a week. Well, of course, if you do 30 million tests a week in America, you're going to be finding cases if you consider having a bit of the virus in your system a case. But, you know, you probably heard this. It is true. We all have some cancer cells in our body, but we don't become a cancer patient until those cells begin to proliferate due to a weakened immune system or other causes. You wouldn't say you had a cancer case because you had a few cancer cells in you if you didn't actually have a cancer develop in your body. By the same token, you wouldn't say you had a case of the flu just because you had a couple of flu viruses in your body. But they're doing something very different with COVID. If you've got just a trace of COVID-19 in you, they're calling that a case. This is not to say that nobody's sick today. I don't know the true numbers today. And I do want to mention something, too, that there is, especially early on, there was a distinction with COVID that made it a little different from flu, which is some people got a very serious autoimmune reaction. They call it a cytokine storm. This is where a small percentage of people would get a reaction in their lungs where the alveoli, the basic cell of the lung, where air exchange occurs would be invaded, and they would go into an autoimmune reaction, although doctors find they could reverse that with hydroxychloroquine, which is pretty interesting. But yeah, it can in cases be lethal, but it appears that the lethality is really dropping rapidly. But there's one other caution too that I want to give. And I have only one sentence in bold in my book, and that's where I caution people that even though we talk in the book about how they've inflated the death numbers by tinkering with death certificates and by conflating COVID with people who are already dying from advanced cancer and advanced lung disease, it's possible that this pandemic too, that Bill Gates has been slightly hinting about, there may be an upsurge in deaths come the fall or the winter, because it may spread a bioweapon saying that it's another version of COVID, or it may be the 5G that David Icke rather eloquently spoke about before he was censored off of YouTube. I don't know exactly what they have in mind. But right now, I think it's accurate to say that the death rate is extremely low. But I do want to give one caution that they may have some scheme in mind where they will increase the death rates in the future.
You get into that in the book, and that's very important, because there's a real sense for you reading the book, this is the beginning of something. It isn't an end game of itself. It's the beginning of something. And you obviously want to talk about the future, cashless society, of course, the mass surveillance, mandatory vaccination, health passports. So we might, as far as whoever and whatever's behind this is the beginning, right?
Yes, it seems that this New World Order we've warned about, I never knew it would be a medical New World Order, but Bill Gates has been saying that we'll need digital certificates. And when I heard about the quantum dot tattoos, I thought that was just a conspiracy theory.
Me
but
too.
Then I found out that Rice University School of Engineering is talking all about this. I'm sorry, you were about to say
no,
something.
No, I wasn't. I just said me too. I thought it was crazy when I heard it. And then, again, through reading you, I'm like, wow, this is real. You're right.
Yeah. Well, this is a direct quote from the Rice University School of Engineering. Quote, Kevin McHugh, an assistant professor of bioengineering at Rice, and a team from MIT, reporting a cover story in Science Translational Medicine on the development of quantum dot tags that fluoresce with information after injected as part of a vaccination. The tags are incorporated in only some of the array of sugar-based microneedles on a patch. When the needles dissolve in about 2 minutes, they deliver the vaccine and leave the pattern of tags just under the skin, where they become something like a barcode tattoo. Instead of ink, this highly specific medical record consists of copper-based quantum dots embedded in biocompatible micron-scale capsules. Their infrared dye is invisible, but the pattern they set can be read by a customized smartphone. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation came to us and said, hey, we have a real problem. No one who's been vaccinated, said McHugh. End quote. That's from our Rice University School of Bioengineering. And Bill Gates has not just been talking about a vaccination record. He's been talking for a long time about the need for a global ID, how we all need a global ID. And that's why when you go to the global ID 2020 Alliance, you see the Microsoft logo right on their front page. They want everyone to have a digital ID. And right now in West Africa, they are actually doing trial runs on something. It's a digital ID backed by Gavi, the vaccine alliance between big pharma and governments funded by the Gates Foundation, a company called TrustStamp, which specializes in artificial intelligence, and MasterCard, of all people. They're working on a system in Africa that will integrate your vaccination record with your ID, with your payment system. And so obviously they're modeling this for the whole world. And this is why, for those who are Christians, find this very significant, because right now in America, many stores, you can't go in and buy something without a mask. It's a small bump up to say that in the future you won't be able to go into a store and buy something unless you've got this mark, this digital tattoo, which Rice University acknowledges that they're making, which will have your financial record and your vaccine record in it. And you'll probably have to wave that in front of a smartphone in order to enter the store. And that's very much like the mark of the beast.
I was going to ask you.
Revelation. You can't buy or sell without the mark. You know, you can't get much closer than that.
I know you've got a deep and personal faith, and I respect it. I'm pretty much agnostic. I don't know, but I have great respect for men and women of faith. Mostly the people I know, they're usually the best people I know, and I shouldn't really say that now, but they generally are the most conscientious anyway. I think you believe it, don't you? I'm not expressing skepticism here now. I'm just putting it out there that it is connected, that this has been foretold in the Bible, and here we are. And if people accept this, that this is some sort of satanic agenda.
As Luciferian, I was very impressed when Ronald Bernard, the Dutch former Dutch currency manipulator, went on to YouTube with viral videos exposing the whole European money system and saying that he was asked as a top banker, eventually he was asked to actually take part in child ritual sacrifice. This was satanic. He was taken to the Church of Satan. And this is a top banker. And this has been exposed for a long time. You know, you go back to Ted Gunderson, the former FBI chief in Los Angeles. Yeah. You go back to the 1950s. William Guy Carr of Canadian Intelligence said these people were Luciferians. It's true. You know, even if other people don't accept the idea of Lucifer, these people do. And they're not, you know, when I was a hippie, which is, you know, we're talking the early 1970s, we're talking, oh man, 50 years ago. When I was a hippie, that was a sort of a Marxist viewpoint that the only thing that motivated these rich people at the top was money. But, you know, money is the carrot that they use to motivate people. In reality, there's an evil there that goes beyond money. You know, there's no money in poisoning people with chemtrails. There's no money in wiping out populations, reducing population. There's no money in that for them. This is about more than money. It's about a very evil agenda.
That's a really important thing to be discussing now at this time, I think. I agree with you. It can't be money. My old pal David Icke believed that energy had a lot to do with it. He talked about the stealing of energy from prepubescent boys and girls, you know, as part of this satanic ritual abuse, which I'm convinced satanic ritual abuse is a real thing and that it is and has happened. I think in recent years, though, the establishment is, if I can call them the establishment, they've been very clever at throwing a couple of major hoaxes at us that they could easily disprove in order to turn people off the trail of SRA abuse. I really do believe that, but I believe it's gone on. I've interviewed people whom I believe. I interviewed a psychoanalyst, a counsellor, Sandra Fecht. I was one of the first people to speak to Sandra, and people started turning up in her office on her couch out of the blue, telling her these disgusting, terrifying things were happening to them. So I think you're on to something there, James. It's really good you get into that, that it can't be bloody money. You're right, there is no money in dropping aluminium, barium and strontium on people. There isn't any money in that. It's something else going on, you know. But it's a hard sell sometimes, that, you know, to try and get people to consider that, you know. But I think you tackle those subjects really well. They're not easy subjects. Before we continue talking, let me remind our listeners. We've got the one and only James Parloff on the line. We are talking about his new book. It's only been out a couple of weeks. COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come. Red-pilled paperback. Very important because it analyses what's been happening in the last 6 months. But it knits together what we've seen, what we've heard, what's been going on, and it looks ahead to what's to come. And I recommend strongly that you read it. It's only £12 on Amazon. I nearly blasphemed there. I can't blaspheme speaking to you, James, so I better watch my P's and Q's. But important book. I recommend you buy it, and I recommend when you've read it, you give it to your brother, your sister, your mum, or your dad. Where are we going to... It's funny you mentioned the passports and all of that. Today, I'm speaking to you from Salford in the northwest of the UK. They are trialling today, James, in this city, the daily testing. So what they're doing in Salford today and in other parts of the country, they've rolled out a new trial where they are convincing large numbers of people to be tested every single day and for those test results to be constantly uploaded and refreshed on the app, the digital health passport that you talked about. And people are happy to go along with this because people's lives have been disturbed in a very dystopian way, and it's really affecting people and it's hurting people. So I see people desperately keen to take the test, the regular test, and sadly I see people desperately keen to take the vaccine. Give me some hope here. I'm seeing people willing to comply with this dystopian nightmare. Tell me that more people are going to refuse it when the time comes.
Well, in my book, I try to end on words of encouragement. One thing I point out is the Bible doesn't end with the Antichrist. You know, George Orwell ended his book, 1984, with Winston saying, "I love Big Brother," and there was no hope. But the Bible doesn't end with the Antichrist, it ended with Christ. I think that we're headed for rough times, but they are definitely not going to last forever. But some of the signs of hope I've been seeing recently, and which I summarize in the book, of one thing, we saw 2 million people showing up protesting in Germany a couple of weeks ago. We had the stand up there in Britain. We've had rallies in England, in Ireland. We've had them in America, but not as much as I'd like to see as other countries are doing. But at the end of the book, I quote police officers and doctors. And one of the things that's encouraging to me is the lawsuits. You know, Gretchen Whitmer of our state of Michigan is known as the lockdown queen. You know, she's under lawsuit now from medical companies because their patients are risking death because of all the shutdowns of what they call a non-essential or anything that's not COVID-related medical services. And in my own home state of Massachusetts, our Governor Baker is under a class action lawsuit from businesses and churches, which are, he instituted this lockdown under a 1950 law that gave the governor emergency authority in the case of a Soviet Union nuclear attack. You know, the Soviets exploded a nuclear bomb in 1949. He's using that as an excuse to lock down the economy now. He has no such authority. It's unconstitutional. And now I understand, I didn't read the article, but I saw the headline yesterday that in Canada, Trudeau is being sued by people against over the masks.
Let me interject. Let me interject just for a minute, because this is really important. Simon Dolan, who's a friend of the programme's, tried to take the UK government on in court, and amazingly, despite an excellent case that the government here acted outside of the law, I thought his case was watertight. It didn't matter. And I do not want to pour cold water on what you're saying, because there is a lovely optimistic theme running through the book, particularly at the end of it, as you just said there. But why should we believe that the justices or the judges, the sitting magistrates, why should we believe they're going to do the right thing for the people? Surely they're all corrupt.
Well, I agree with you there. There are a few exceptions. For example, here in Massachusetts, our Governor Charlie Baker tried to close all gun stores, and he was overruled by a judge. There are some breakthroughs. There was a case, for example, in Ohio, where the governor there, Andy Beshear, tried to, if anybody went to an Easter service, they were to be licensed, quarantined by the government, and that was overturned by a judge. So there are a few judges within the systems, but I agree, you know, just as they get the politicians in the media and the control, they try to get the police and the intelligence services and the justice system under the control as to, I'm not optimistic, but I try to give as much optimism as I can. You know, I quote Sarah Cuniel, member of the Italian parliament, who says that Bill Gates should be brought before the International Court of Justice. And I quote Terrence K. Williams, who's a black comedian with 800,000 Twitter followers, who has said that he'd rather have a fried chicken grease shot up his arm than a Bill Gates vaccine. Yeah. And I've got a cartoon in there. I was given permission by Ben Garrison, a very popular cartoonist in America, of Bill Gates presiding over a 1984 world. And I quote Murat Seyfan, the former world tennis champion, saying that that this whole thing is a New World Order plot. So people are waking up. And I think that's one thing that we can agree upon, that because they're no longer boiling the frog, but they've got their foot on the accelerator trying to push this thing so hard that it's one thing I've noticed is that if people are affected personally by something, they get involved. If you've got a child who was vaccinated, then came down with autism, you're much more likely to get involved. Well, right now, we've got millions and millions of people who have been thrown out of work. And I'm hopeful that these people whose lives have been personally affected by these lockdowns will begin to rise up and take action, and that these street demonstrations and the lawsuits and people speaking out and sharing information begin to turn this around. I'm not going to say that that's likely to happen, but I'm saying that we should give our very best effort.
Good point you made too about celebrities. Here in the northwest of the UK, two hugely famous rock stars, Ian Brown from the Stone Roses and Noel Gallagher from Oasis, both of them have come out very strongly And they haven't just said that the lockdown and the masks are ridiculous. They've gone much further than that and said that it's, you know, it's a very sinister agenda. We've seen soap opera actresses come out, and that's a good bloody thing. You know, they might not want to talk to people like me, fair enough. They don't want to be tainted by association with people like me. No, but fair enough. You know,
there's no taint. There's absolutely no taint. The taint is at the BBC.
Well, this you and I don't know that, but you know, sadly, when you've got groups like you know, so-called anti-racist organisations in this country doing their level best to dissuade people from speaking to people like me, not because I'm a racist myself, but because I've interviewed people in the past who might have been called white supremacists or racist. So, but it's good now to see that these people are actually coming out and speaking out. You know, Peter Ebdon, former world champion snooker player here. I mentioned Simon Dolan. I think there is a lot to be positive about. I'm not going to be a doom monger. James Perloff is our guest. I'm going to say again, get a copy of COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, red-pilled. Get it. I want to ask you this. I think one of the last times we spoke, you and I don't think we ever argued, but I think we had not so much a disagreement, but a different point of view when it came to your president. A lot of my old friends from the US were very optimistic, even 2-3 years into the presidency of President Trump, were very optimistic about him. I never was. I saw him as just another Obama, just another Clinton, just another George H.W. Bush and his son. How do you feel about Bush when it comes to the coronavirus response? Do you hold out still some hope for Trump? Do you think Trump has tried to roll back against the tidal wave of bullshit, James? Or how do you feel about Trump now?
Well, you know, I voted for Trump because it was a no-brainer that you didn't want Hillary Clinton in there. Every single item on her agenda was pro-Rothschild, and at least Trump had the right sound bites. But I have to say, frankly, that he's been under the thumb of the Zionist from the start of his administration. You know, he wasted no time in getting Netanyahu over to the White House, and they moved on our embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and given a proclamation stating that the Golan Heights of Syria now belong to Israel. That's as right. If he had the right to give another country a sovereign land to of a country that he favors. He's been under the thumb of AIPAC, you know, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, from the beginning. Of course, his son Jared Kushner, son-in-law Jared Kushner, is very heavily involved with that. But as far as COVID goes, I was very pleased to see that he withdrew funding from the WHO. I was very pleased to see him talk positively of hydroxychloroquine. On the other hand, he's established an Operation Warp Speed, and he's to get a vaccine out, and he's saying he's going to deploy the military of all things to help get the and so this gives me reason to think, you know, there's quite a number of religious leaders at the end of the book, and some of them like Trump and some of them don't. But one who is quite suspect of Trump is Chuck Baldwin, former presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. And he says that one of the reasons why the deep state, in spite of all the things the media is saying against Trump, why they really want him in there is because he can convince the conservatives and the deplorables, as they call them, to go along with a mandatory vaccine. But if they get a real radical left winger in there, there'll be enormous rebellion against it. But we've seen this happen before. When Richard Nixon in 1972 went with Henry Kissinger to side to China, the former American president, Lyndon Baines Johnson, who would Democrat and liberal, right? He would be called a liberal, said, you know, I never could have done that. They would have called me a communist because Richard Nixon, a so-called conservative, went there. He got away with it. And I think we're seeing that now with Trump, that he's able to get away with convincing people to take the vaccine because he's perceived as a pro-constitutionalist, as he's perceived as being a good guy by many Americans. That's a negative view to take. Again, there are some good things he's done. I certainly would not disagree with that, but I would agree with your assessment, Richie, that basically the control is so tight by the oligarchs worldwide that they're never going to let a leader get in there who is truly, truly against their agenda.
Hey, by the way, if I totally understand why people like yourself voted for him. You had some very legitimate reasons to vote for him. He made some very seriously welcome claims about things he would do when he was running for president. And Hillary Clinton is the devil incarnate. You're absolutely right. So I would never say I told you so. Why I love, because I don't know anything. I don't know any more than you do. I totally understand why people like you voted for him. What sets you apart as a journalist and as a writer who's desperately searching for the truth is the courage that you have to say, shite, as we would say in Ireland, in the old country. This guy has gone in a totally different way. So that's your absolute credit. So it's not, I've never said I told you. I gave up voting for any of these people a long time ago. It's the only thing I ever understood was that they were all controlled. And the reason I can say that is because I worked in commercial and national media for years. I rubbed shoulders with these bastards. I interviewed them. I knew how disgusting they were, whether they were left-wing or right-wing. They're all the same, and they all work for the same people. But no, you're very honest in talking about that, and in the book as well. It's been brilliant speaking with you again, James. I'm obviously going to give you the last word. Tell us where people can find the book. I've mentioned Amazon. I think it's a steal, by the way, at £12 here. I really do, because you can read it, give it to your gran, give it to your son, your daughter, your brother, your sister, and get them to look at it, because you don't get writing like this too often. It's very well written, and it's not just about the virus as it has happened. It's not just about the lockdown. It's looking forward, and that's very important too. Where can people get it, my friend?
Well, in addition to Amazon, and America Power of Prophecy is selling it. I'm working on several other potential secondary sellers, because you never know when it might get clamped down. I'll just mention, by the way, the book has 27 chapters, but it's only about 200 pages long. Average chapter is about 6 pages, and we try to cover. I try to cover every aspect of the lockdown, the civil liberties, the health impact, the economic impact. The way they've inflated the death numbers, the testing, the various theories, the bioweapon theory, the 5G theory, the other theories, a full chapter in Bill Gates, and all the future plans they seem to have, the global vaccines, the storm over hydroxychloroquine, the digital ID, the cashless society, contact tracing. There's chapters on all of these. And by the way, I just want to mention that everything is documented, because it's very important when you're talking to a skeptic. They say, well, where's that coming from? So almost every other sentence, you'll see another endnote, a number that leads you to the exact source for that information. And I also added an index, because I feel that for a book to have value, you need an index so people can look up information quickly. So I've tried to make this as practical and useful a book. But again, it's available on Amazon. I hope it stays there. My website is jamesperloff.com, P-E-R-L-O-F-F. And if people go there, they can, in the future, give me updates about the availability of the book. And again, I'm working on building more secondary sellers so that the book can remain in circulation for the public.
Thanks for writing it, and thanks for sending us a copy of it last week and giving me a chance to read it. There is no fat in the book. It's terrific, as you've just described there yourself. Godspeed to you, James. Thanks for coming back today. All the success in the world to you with the book, and hopefully in the autumn or the fall, as you Philistines call it over there across the pond. Hopefully hopefully in the autumn, we'll get to speak to you again. Thanks for your time today, my friend.
Thank you. God bless you. You know, Richie, it's not only great to hear the truth when I'm on your show, but it's a lot of fun too. So thank you so much.
You're a gentleman. Thanks, James. Congratulations to you for all your success. James Perloff. And the website is jamesperloff.com. The book is COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come. Red Pill. That's the book. COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come. Yeah. Yeah. They don't always give me a book, you know. When people say, Richie, can I come on to talk about me book? And I say, yeah, where is it? Oh, I can't send it to you. Well, thank off then. Send me the bloody book. Incidentally, Kevin Myers has a new book out, and it's in the Post, and I believe it's fantastic. Jean Ann has read it and spoken in glowing terms about it. So I will be getting Kevin on to talk about that as well. Apparently the book does deal with, and of course it would do, the horrendous situation Kevin found himself in 3 or so years ago, when he lost his job with the Sunday Times, when they sacked him for no reason, because he made what was at worst an off-colour remark about Jewish culture. In fact, it was a funny remark. Like I said, at best it was funny. He made a joke in an article saying that the article was about the gender pay gap at the BBC, and a couple of the women who were doing very well at the BBC financially happened to be Jewish ladies, Claudia Winkleman and Vanessa Feltz. And Kevin said something along the lines of, because Jews are not stupid. They're not known for their stupidity when it comes to doing deals. And every Jewish person I met, including Stephen Englander, who's a great guy, who's doing a new podcast series, Stephen Englander. He's a Jewish businessman in Manchester. He's invited me to be on his podcast. I can't wait to be on it. Because nobody invites me to do anything. Not very often, anyway. And Stephen's a Jewish guy. Stephen said, that was funny. Nothing anti-Semitic. Various Jewish groups in Ireland, the Jewish community group said, Myers is absolutely spot on. Nothing wrong with that. He's not a bigot. But it didn't matter. They ruined his career anyway. So he talks about that and discusses that in his forthcoming book and more besides. So Kevin Myers will be on this program really soon to talk about that. Well, I'm running out of time rapidly. So let me say this. This is 6 years today. 6 years. 6 years. It's mad. I wrote today, and I meant it when I wrote it. When I was preparing the show 6 years ago, the very first one, I was fairly fed up about it. If Caroline was here now, my missus, she would say, yeah, I was pretty despondent about it. She might remember, she might not remember. Because I thought I'd screwed up royally. I thought I'd properly screwed up in turning down a lucrative, and not just lucrative, but kind of high profile radio presenting gig with a very well known radio station in the north of the country. And this is known to be true. Because I said this once or twice, people said, oh, Richie, give over. After the People's Voice, Richie, who would have given you a job? You know, because of my association with David at the time. But there was still a job for me, and I was offered a very good job presenting a breakfast radio programme here in the north. And it was the missus. And it was David Icke that said, don't do it. Because you'll get pissed off of it very quickly. Because you will get tired of being told you shouldn't have said that. And you shouldn't have said this. And you shouldn't have asked that question of that interviewee. And they were right, of course. I would have gotten cheesed off with it very quickly. And undoubtedly, I would have done. It would have been fun for a while, but I would have gotten fed up of it. And as I was leading into that first programme on the 15th of September 2014, which was at 8 o'clock, because it was at 8 o'clock in the very beginning, I was absolutely depressed about it. Properly pissed off. I thought, what the feck have you done that for? I never thought anybody would support it. I never believed it. I'm not a believer, you see. My friends will tell you that. Richie's a big naysayer. People said to me, do the programme and people will support it. And I said, they won't. They'll be miserly bastards. They'll just take it for free and they'll never support it. Why would they? They're getting it for nothing. Why would they pay to hear some bald muppet interview people and shout and rant about things sometimes when they can just have it for nothing? But I did exercise a little bit of faith in what the future missus was telling me and what David Icke, God love him, was telling me. And I don't say God love him in any condescending way at all. You know that. And I put a bit of faith in there. And the programme has endured for 6 years because there's always been enough money there to pay the fairly high running cost of it, because terabytes of data are basically transferred every month. You know, hundreds of thousands of people listen to it live, let alone the people who get it on iTunes and Spotify. It costs a lot of money, and yet at the end of the month there's always a little bit left over. It succeeded because you have said, yeah, fair enough, I'll support it. So thank you. And I do mention a few individual people today. I'm not going to mention them again. You can see their names if you want on Facebook. They know who they are. People who've been there since day one. And not always since day one. People I've met recently as well, who've been a great help and a huge gift, really, to me, because without them, it wouldn't have been nearly as much fun to do the show, and it wouldn't have been nearly as, I suppose, successful as it has. And in, by successful, I mean, don't think I'm displaying any self-fondness now. Successful in terms of the numbers it now reaches. It now reaches exorbitant numbers of people around the world. And that's just an amazing thing. And it's growing and growing and growing. And there you are. I'll shut me cake hole and tell you. I'm not too sure, but I might have Spiro Skouras on the programme tomorrow. I might have Spiro. Not sure about Thursday, but I'm sure something will happen. I'm sure something will happen. Just to mention former Supreme Court Justice Jonathan Sumption has expressed interest in, not interest, he said he would come on the programme if I asked him after his cycling holiday. He is aghast, of course, at the encroachment on our civil liberties. He's aghast at that and agreed to get into it. And I'll keep looking to bring new people on the programme that have not appeared on the programme before, learned men and women that are challenging this bullshit, so that you can take those interviews and you can give them to people whom have swallowed the blue pill. And you can say, listen to this guy, listen to this woman. She's an academic. She's got a PhD. Why won't you listen to what she has to say? Because it works, I think. It works some of the time anyway. Rightio, going to leave you with Sammy Davis Jr. today. Thanks for being with me over the last 6 years. I will thank one person, the absolutely extraordinary Caroline Tisserant, my better half, my soulmate, the love of my life. None of it would have been possible without her, because she's put this before her own very successful and very brilliant career. She's put this first, me and this programme. She always has done. And I don't know why she does, but she does. And she's amazing. So we'll dedicate this programme to her and to you as well. I'll see you tomorrow at 5 then.